KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Agin. You're listening to Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Yeah, on Chondo, on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Good evening to y'all. Good morning to you. Good day, whoever you may be, wherever you might be as you're listening to this radio program. Welcome on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagin. It is good to be with y'all here tonight. And looking really forward to the program. But first, a quick thank you to Corey, New Wave Radio Theater. Bye, Corey. Moon Over Morocco. One more week, I guess, to finish things up for Moon Over Morocco. Been a great series that Corey's had on for the last 8 or 9 weeks, I think. And we'll finish that up next week. And always 1 hour before this program, on Monday nights at 10 o'clock, Corey does it on New Wave Radio Theater, okay? Before that, Kelvin and Jason, jazz plus blues equals the 5-year discrepancy. Tech Radio keeps us up on the amazing world of high technology, and Jeff Wheeler, speaking of Jeff Wheeler, just walked in the door, actually. He starts things off at 3 o'clock every Monday afternoon with a wonderful program called Uncommon Light. Good music, good talk, good news. A cold Monday night, moon less than half full, I guess, and waning. Real good night to curl up with some outrageous radio, all right? The 3rd of December, and you're listening to it here, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, your imagination station. It's good to be here with you and a part of it all. All right, thank you to all of you who joined us last week. Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher, what a pleasure. Just a remarkable woman and a thrill to have had the opportunity to talk with her last week. So thank you, Elizabeth. That was great. And just really enjoyed myself, and I hope the rest of the gang out there enjoyed the show last week, too. Last week, we had music from John Condren and The Benefit. Once again, thanks to John and his band for the music. Great stuff from Chicago, Illinois, my old stomping grounds. So thanks to everybody involved in the show last week. By the way, all of the musicians that are featured on the program can be found on the website right over there at mikehagan.com, and just click over to the music archives, all right? If you missed the show last week, by the way, or any other of the programs that we've done over the last 3 or 4 years, you can always hear them after the fact. They're all up there on the website at mikehagan.com. My last name is spelled H-A-G-A-N, and Mike is spelled M-I-K-E. I might change it to M-Y-K-E or something like that. I don't know. Just so I can get another website with a different spelling, so for the one person out of a billion that decides to go to the wrong place. All right. I digress. In the program archives, you'll find all the programs that we've done over the last few years, okay? Check out, you know, the list there and see if you can find something that seems interesting to you, perhaps, and, you know, share it with others if you think they might like it, too, all right? Okay, tonight we are going to talk with a man whose name is Paco Algren, and he is the author of a book that's called Discipline. It's a fictional book. And I don't read a lot of fiction, but I read this one, and it's an interesting book that actually deals with a lot of themes that we talk about here on Orbit often, even though it's placed in sort of a fictional context. But it'll be an interesting discussion with Paco Algren at the midnight hour in about 45 minutes or so. Before that, we'll do space weather and a few other things. We have the music of Anchando tonight. We started the show off with a song called Anchando Stylee. And anyway, they're a great mix of Latin and reggae, rock and roll, hip-hop from Omaha, Nebraska. And they're going to come to you tonight from Radio Orbit, all right? We'll hear Anchando and a bunch of different songs from them throughout the rest of the program. I think I'll actually do that right away. I got a couple things I need to sort of take care of here in the studio. So let me play another song from Anchando. And and I'll come back to you in just a few minutes, okay? This is, let's see, what do I want to play here? Yeah, actually, this one goes out to all my girlfriends out there with girlfriends out there. All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. This is Anchando.
know she's always got a shot glass in her hand. Straight up Jack or Tequila makes her a hard man. Woman, I said, she can outdrink any man and still get more girls. From what I understand, and she said, I'm a real nasty woman. I get drunk, all of my girlfriends, I go down.
That's the lesbian song from Anchando. Great music from Omaha, Nebraska. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. It's about quarter after 11 or so on the 3rd now of December, 2007. Hello to everybody listening to us this evening on KOPN over the traditional airwaves, live or otherwise. Sometimes people listen over the internet now, and they listen whenever they like because the show is podcast. And if you're interested in that type of technology, you can go over to KOPN's website at kopn.org and snoop around a little bit. And I'm sure if you got a little bit of ambition, you can find any of that stuff that you like. So I encourage people to do that. Check out the radio site, the website for the radio station at kopn.org. And, of course, my site is MikeHagan, HAGAN.com. All right. We do this every Monday from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. in the morning, Radio Orbit. Here at KOPN, and we talk about the strange and the unusual and the remarkable and cutting-edge science and technology, and talk a lot about the natural world and, well, just a lot about, you know, the place that we live and the things that we do here. It is a pleasure to be able to do it, and I love it. And I appreciate the opportunity to do it and the people that make it possible, all right? So support our radio station. It's a treasure and a beacon out here in, you know, one of the notches of the Bible Belt. So, one more time, kopn.org, okay? And if you want to listen to the radio program or any of the shows here on KOPN over the internet, you know, you don't have to be here in Columbia anymore or in the mid-Missouri area. You can listen over the internet through the live stream and anywhere on the planet. As long as you have a decent internet connection, you can listen to KOPN. So all of you out there, and a lot of people that listen to my show do. It's actually ironic. The great majority of the people that listen to my program are nowhere near me. I have sort of quiet listenership, I guess is a good way to say it. Maybe that's a very, like, you know, positive way to say it. But I have sort of a quiet listenership here in the local regional area. But I have a lot of listeners from, you know, places outside of Missouri. And the website, you know, gets a whole lot of traffic from a whole lot of places. So, anyway, I appreciate everyone that comes here and listens to the program every week, okay? Speaking of the website, thanks to Larry Noriger, the web wizard. Big thank you to Larry, a wonderful guy who's always doing great work and helping me out with the website. he does great work on his own, and he has a whole lot of different projects that he's involved with. And don't think that we forgot about you, Larry. And he'll be back with us, I know, one of these days to be able to spend some more time on the forum and, you know, just participating more in the program. But we love you, Larry, and thanks for everything that you do, okay? Also, the people out there that are sending art and music and poetry, for example, tonight, the music of On Chondo, you know, I would not have it were it not for the fact that, you know, it was sent to me. It's great independent music, great young group of guys that are, you know, doing it their own way, using the internet and using alternative means to the old orthodox and established ways of creating and distributing music and really doing great stuff. So anyway, On Chondo, I appreciate them and the ability to share their music with you guys tonight and other people that send poetry and, you know, visual art, all that stuff. We're doing our best to get it up on the website, and if you're an artist of any variety, please get in touch with me, and we'll try to figure out a way to share your art with other people, okay? All right, well, one more time, the website, Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. Just take a look over there and let me know what you think. It's, you know, it's free, and there's no registering and like that. You'll have access to everything that, that we're doing there, and more than anything, I like to hear from people and see what they think, so feel free to share your thoughts with me, and, you know, I'm open to criticism, suggestions, whatever, okay? The forum is always busy. Wonderful little bulletin board discussion forum that we keep up there at the website, and there's lots of interesting people and topics that are discussed all the time. More than I can keep up with for the most part anymore, but that goes on 24/7. And there's also a live chat room that's up and active right now, always active on Monday nights, but again, that's something you can use at any time. Just go on over to the website, and you can click over to the chat room or to the forum. And I thank my good friend Chaos for getting the whole chat thing together. He does it every week, and I appreciate the effort. I'll peek in there for questions and comments throughout the program tonight. If you got things you want to talk about, certainly post them up there in the chat, and we'll see if we can get to them with our guests tonight, all right? I encourage my guests as well as listeners to join us over there, by the way, in the forum and in the chat. So, all right. Okay, my email address... is Orbit Radio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio@AOL.com. Send me an email if you have anything that you think is, you know, of interest, and I'd be glad to check it out and send you something back, all right? The guests and the musicians that appear on this program will do the same. We're all about sort of two-way communication and, you know, sharing ideas. It goes both ways, so feel free to email me and the people that appear on the program, whether they're musicians, artists, or, you know, authors, whoever I might be talking to at any particular occasion, all right? Everybody likes to hear from you, and I do as well. Okay, the phone number here at the station in the studio is area code 573-874-5676. That's just the phone right next to me here if you want to call during a break or something. If we take calls on the air, that number will be area code 573-443-8255. I'm not sure if we'll do that tonight with Paco, but if we do, that's the number, 443-8255. You can write that down, okay? All right, let me tell you a little bit about what's going to go on for the next few weeks. I'm really excited about the way the end of the year is sort of coming together here. Tonight, as I mentioned, Paco Algren, he's the author of a book called Discipline. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, it's a fictional book, but it deals with a lot of things that we talk about on the program here, including, you know, modern physics and mystical esoteric ideas and spirituality and, you know, consciousness and life and death. And it's pretty cool book that he's written. It's called Discipline, and we'll talk with the author Paco Algren in just a little while here, about 40 minutes, okay? Next week, on the 10th of December, Richard Allen Miller. All right. Back by popular demand. Richard Allen Miller, you know, if you've heard a couple of the programs or any of the shows that we've done with Richard over the last year and a half or so, you'll be excited to have him come back. But he's a brilliant, brilliant guy who has a background that's just hilarious. He was listening to the show we did with Elizabeth Rauscher last week. And, of course, Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher, you know, was going to places like Stanford Research Institute in, you know, the early days and working with Andre Puharich, Hal Putoff, and a lot of, you know, very interesting folks that have come up, Russell Targ, and, you know, I mean, all kinds of people that came out of SRI. But Richard was there as well. In fact, Puharich was one of Richard Allen Miller's mentors. And he has a lot to say about that stuff, you know, because a lot of these people get a bad rap because of, you know, stories that come out of these places. And certainly SRI has been responsible for some sort of nefarious activity, no doubt about it. You know, the MK Ultra stuff and a lot of the mind control experiments that went on with drugs and LSD, and a lot of this stuff was happening there at the Stanford Research Institute in the 60s and the 70s, and still is for the most part today, I would imagine. But, you know, a lot of these people are just young scientists that are coming up trying to get, you know, a good gig at the best place possible, and they end up there. You know, Elizabeth Rauscher got her PhD from Berkeley, and she's worked for NASA and JPL and, you know, consulted for the UN and the U.S. Congress and all this other stuff, and she's just a brilliant physicist. But the fact that she was working with Andrei Puharich and some of these other guys that get a bad rap sometimes, you know, makes her appear guilty by association. Same thing with Richard Allen Miller and a lot of these people. But for my money, Richard is doing wonderful work. I think he's a brilliant guy, and he's sharing everything that he can with people, and he has a whole lot to share. And so we're going to talk with Richard Allen Miller again on the 10th of December, next Monday, okay? And I think we're going to talk about psychic phenomenon. We've talked about shamanism. We've talked a lot about plants and farming. You know, in the spring, we'll probably do that again with Richard, maybe before that, but we'll do a show on farming and, you know, small acreage farming and how you can have a farm, you know, in the backyard of your own home, and, you know, how to, you know, determine the quality of the soil by the weeds that grow there and lots of things. But Richard's really, really a brilliant, brilliant guy when it comes to a lot of these things, including the way things grow. So, anyway, we'll talk with Richard Allen Miller next Monday, and I'm real excited about it because he's cool. All right, on the 17th of December, I'm trying to get Brooke Medicine Eagle, a wonderful woman, healer, and herbalist, and just a brilliant woman, and I'd like to have Brooke on the program here. I was introduced to her through Stephen Herod Buhner, who, of course, is the author of The Lost Language of Plants and The Secret Teachings of Plants and a number of other books. But Stephen Herod Buhner, who's a favorite on the program, will be here on Christmas Eve. On the 24th of December, we'll have Stephen Buhner back. So I'm really, really excited about that. And we're going to be talking about healthcare and what it means and, you know, what it is and what it might be in a better place, in a better world maybe. So Stephen Herod Buhner, just one of my favorite people, a guy that I've learned a whole lot from and somebody who I really respect a whole lot. Comes from a long line of healers and a long line of very, very gifted herbalists. And, man, I don't know, between him and Richard Allen Miller, I don't know who I would say knows more about things that grow. But Stephen Buhner certainly approaches it perhaps in a little bit of a different manner than Richard does. Richard is a scientist at heart, although he has a natural side of him, I think that he's perfectly comfortable, you know, bringing into the equation. But I think that the scientist is the majority of Richard. Stephen's the other way around. Stephen is a nature man, and he knows science and can talk science. But for the most part, he's a man of the wood, you know, of the green. And so, anyway, it's a thrill to have Stephen Herod Buhner back on the program on the 24th of December. And it'll actually be a live program. Stephen has always been reticent to do the program live because he likes to go to bed early, but I finally talked him into it. So we'll keep him up for a couple hours, and we'll have to keep him occupied and give him some good questions to keep his mind going and keep him awake, okay? And I know all you guys are perfectly capable of doing that. So anyway, that's what's going on Christmas Eve. And let's see, on the 31st, the following Monday, Paul Laffoley will do the New Year's program with Paul Laffoley, another one of my favorite people, the brilliant artist and architect, student and friend of Buckminster Fuller, who I just, by the way, I got this amazing DVD. One of the listeners to the program sent me a link to this YouTube thing with Bucky Fuller. You know, and he went to SIU over here in Carbondale. It's just not far from here, and that's where I went to school. And I was introduced to Buckminster Fuller when I was a young man. One of my girlfriend's fathers gave me a book called Spaceship Earth from Buckminster Fuller, written by Buckminster Fuller. And it was, to this day, one of those life-changing books. He was really a visionary, Buckminster Fuller was. Anyway, through following a thread that I found through this YouTube video, I was able to get a hold of a couple of DVDs that are what are called the Lost Interviews of Buckminster Fuller. And it's hours and hours of these interviews with Buckminster Fuller talking about everything that he was interested in. And it's just, I mean, it's like finding a big nugget of gold somewhere on the ground, you know, maybe to somebody who gives us a crap about money. But, you know, that's what it was like for me. It was finding a gigantic diamond, you know. And anyway, there's this guy whose name was Damian Simpson, I think, who was a television host on a program on a station in California, a public television station. And man, that guy was way ahead of his time. He did these amazing interviews with Bucky Fuller 30 years ago. And I'm so pleased that that stuff is available again. And maybe I'll grab some audio from that stuff one of these days, maybe for Dr. Fuller's birthday or the anniversary of his passing or something. And we'll play some of his words, because honestly, he was really a remarkable guy with a very, very hopeful and positive outlook for the future, and just a hero of mine. So anyway, thanks to my listener friend who sent me that information about Bucky Fuller. Now back to Paul Laffoley. Paul Laffoley, of course, comes from that school and is friends of and peers with many of those types of people, including this guy here from Illinois that did all the great architecture up in the northern Illinois and Wisconsin area. Oh, I can't believe I can't remember his name. At any rate, Paul Laffoley's, you know, just one of these people who's up there with the most skilled architects of all time, and also one of the most amazing visual artists that I've ever seen. I was talking to one of my friends a year and a half ago or so before I had known who Paul Laffoley was, and they had commented about the interview that I did with Alex Gray, you know, the visionary artist from New York, well, who makes his home in New York and, you know, runs the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors and has an amazing gallery there in New York City. And certainly Alex Gray is an amazing artist, and I love his work, and I think he's an amazing person, and I was thrilled to be able to interview him. If you haven't heard that, check it out. It's a great interview, and he's amazing. At any rate, the person I was talking to said, man, you like Alex Gray, man, you should check out Paul Laffoley. And I said, really, who's he? And then he showed me some of his work, and I was stunned. And Paul and I have since become friends, and he's revealed things to me that I would have never guessed would have come from an artist, including the solution to the 9/11 story. But anyway, Paul Laffoley on the 31st of December for New Year's Eve. Be a thrill. And we'll have the music that night of the Hootenhowlers a little bit live here in the studio, and then some brand new recorded material that hasn't even been released that will play really fun music for the New Year's Eve party down here on Radio Orbit and KOPN, okay? Jonathan Zapp back at the beginning of the year on the 7th of January, and lots more in the wing, okay? All right. I think that I will play another song, and then we'll come back and we'll, got a few other things to talk about, and some news and some space weather and all that. And then we've got Paco Algren at the top of the hour, okay? All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. I've got a little bit of a cold, so I apologize if I'm a little nasal tonight. I'm doing the best I can, and that's just the way it is, all right? I love you all, and listen to this song. It's Mike, Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
Was it the way you talked or the way you held yourself? 'cause I just wanna see you want me to, and I belong to you. And my style, my face, I couldn't touch, God knows. And I wanna hold you forever and never let you go.
Pretty song called Heart and Soul from Anchando. You listen to it on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, about 11:36 now on the 3rd of December. Paco Algren at the top of the hour. All right, announcements. Mother Jones. Who was Mother Jones? Mary Harris Jones, actually her name. And she was born, I'm not sure, around 1837. Some people say 1830, but at any rate, she passed on the 30th of November, 1930. And it was just a few days ago, and I wanted to make note of it. She was, according to Reese Blizzard, this is the former district attorney of West Virginia, Mother Jones was the most dangerous woman in America, according to this guy. According to others, she was one of the most forceful and picturesque figures of the American labor movement. It's been 70 years since her death, 77 years, and she's still a part of the culture. In fact, there's a magazine, of course, Mother Jones Magazine, that that still carries her name. And she was a very amazing woman and was involved with among other things, that amazing march in 1903. I think it was called the March of the Mill Children. And Mother Jones had a whole bunch of children who were, you know, forced to work, not really forced, but they shouldn't have been working in factories where they were losing their fingers and this sort of thing, right? But anyway, children were forced to work in certain cases, and they marched, Mother Jones and a whole bunch of young people, from Kensington, Pennsylvania, to New York, to protest the child labor laws and to go right to President Roosevelt, as a matter of fact, which they did. And he hid behind his curtains, you know, while they stood at the street beneath. At any rate, Mother Jones has a notable place for sure in our history here in this country. And she was a union organizer and an orator and a wonderful speaker. And she had a tremendous influence on the making of history. So anyway, an astounding woman and one who, in my opinion, should be remembered. So here's to her, Mary Harris Jones. Thank you, Grandmother. You're amazing. Okay, what else did I want to talk about? I got 5 minutes. I want to talk about AIDS and HIV real fast. You know, this is something that we've been talking about since August. But I sent another letter, by the way, today to Michael Mukasey, the new Attorney General in Washington. He never responded to the first one that I sent, nor have many of the hundreds of people that have now been notified about this whole business. And, of course, hundreds in the media all around not only this country but all around the world. The people from the Vatican. I mean, when the Jesuit general gives you the most direct answer of anyone, you know something's going on, all right? So for those not familiar with what I'm talking about, I'll reiterate. The U.S. Special Virus Cancer Program, it operated officially under NIH and NCI from 1962 through 1978. The budget over that period was nearly $550 million. There were annual progress reports that were published for every one of the 15 years that the program was under operation. I have access to a number of the annual progress reports, the original documents. Once again, I request a full and comprehensive, transparent review and investigation of the U.S. Special Virus Cancer Program. What was it all about? As for me, I'm fully convinced that this is the etiological genesis of the HIV virus. As they say in the biz, I have a high level of confidence that an investigation of the U.S. Special Virus Cancer Program will show this. And I think that everybody out there that's concerned about this sort of thing should be demanding the same thing as I am, an investigation into the U.S. Special Virus Cancer Program. One of the most encouraging things, I'm talking with Dr. Colin Ross of the Ross Institute. I got a nice email from Dr. Ross today. He's been on the program before. Of course, he's the author of Bluebird, The Deliberate Creation of Multiple Personality by Psychiatrists. And he's a brilliant psychiatrist and a medical doctor with wonderful credentials, but somebody with a lot of courage. And when I read Bluebird years ago, I knew that Colin Ross was somebody that I wanted to interview. And that's a very interesting show. It was one of the first interviews that I did because I thought it was important when I began to do this radio program. There were a number of people that I wanted to do as quickly as possible because I never knew how long I'd be able to do this. And Colin Ross was one of those back in probably 2003 or 2004, I guess. But at any rate, Dr. Ross and I are talking now about this because he knows at least as much as anybody about this particular type of thing because he's investigated it for many, many years. At any rate, we'll see. But this is not going to go away. And eventually all these folks who knew about this and who know about it, everybody who knew but did nothing, everyone is going to be held to account. All right? I have a friend whose name is Denise. I'm not going to say the rest of her name. All right? And this is a woman who I have a tremendous amount of respect for. I love her. And she has helped me with many, many things over the last 5 or 6 years. She's a wonderful nurse. And as a matter of fact, she is a big-time nurse at the Naval Hospital at Bethesda, the largest naval hospital in the country, in Bethesda, Maryland. And Denise knows about what I'm talking about because she's helped me with some of it. And this is how serious this stuff is, okay? Because I called Denise today. I haven't been able to talk to her for the last couple months because ever since this thing got hot and I put up progress report number 15, the one that has the budget in it. I put it up on the web so everyone can see it with their own eyes. 465 pages of the stuff. She got very concerned, you know. And so she has not spoken to me for over 2 months. One of my best friends, you know, a woman who I call when I need help with my children, you know, for health reasons and this sort of thing. Someone who I love and I really trust. And I'm scared about her, you know. At any rate, I haven't had communication with her until today. And I finally got the nerve to call her at Bethesda, which I did. And she picked up the phone and said, "Hello, this is Denise." And I said, "Denise, hi, it's Mike." And she said, "Hi, how you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm okay, how you doing?" And she said, "Mike who?" And I said, "Mike Hagen." And she said, "I'm sorry, I can't talk to you." And she hung up the phone. Because she knows, and she's scared. All right? But don't you think this isn't real, you people who are listening to this, all right? HIV, the AIDS virus, was created in a laboratory in this country, all right? It was done with great ill intent, and I got everything I need to prove it. And if anybody wants a piece of it, send them my way, okay? It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
Looking all around, cause I feel kind of funny. Everybody's feeling like I'm not no fun. Makes me feel kind of strange. Everything is rearranged. I don't think it's ever gonna be the same. Look out! Look who it is, it's me in the mirror. Than I did last year. I hold my hand way up high. You still feel the same. I got much love for you still. Clear out again. I clear my head and clear my mind. Now I'm really going fine. I'm not wasting no more time. Light out, watching out. Now, light out, hear me now, light out, feel me now, light down, ba ba ba, light out, walk it now, light out, hear me now, light out, feel it now, yeah. I'm doing this thing. I'm doing this thing. I'm doing this thing.
sorry, a little road rage there from Anchando. That's actually the name of that song, and we heard Lights Out before that, a couple there from a great band from Omaha, Nebraska. It's Mike. You're listening to KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. The radio program is called Radio Orbit. It's a pleasure to be with you all tonight. We'll have Paco Algren in just a few minutes, top of the hour here, the author of an amazing and cool book called Discipline that I had the pleasure of reading over the last couple months, and we'll talk with him for the rest of the program, starting at the midnight hour here, okay? In the meantime, let's do a little bit of space weather here real fast. Certainly one of the most impressive meteor showers of the year should be peaking on or about Friday, the 14th of December, about a week and a half from now. Sky watchers out in places where you don't have a lot of light pollution can see hundreds of shooting stars probably in a week and a half. This is the Geminid meteor shower, of course, and if you start looking up there probably Thursday evening, the 13th of December, you know, anytime after 9 or 10 local time probably, it'll start out slow, but by Friday morning, I think there should be dozens at least of very bright meteors, you know, streaking across the sky, and certainly hundreds over the course of an hour, we think. So anyway, the Geminid meteor shower going to peak in the next week and a half or so, okay? Mars has an interesting conjunction or passing with a very bright star called Metsuda in the constellation Gemini. Speaking of the Geminids, of course, that's why they call them the Geminids, because the meteor shower appears from our perspective here on Earth to come from the direction of the constellation Gemini. This star, Metsuda, is in the constellation Gemini, and right now Mars is right next to it, and it's a nice little naked eye observation that you can make from your own backyard. If you want to see this conjunction, just look to the east a few hours after sunset. Mars will be pretty easy to spot. It's sort of unmistakably red and pretty bright this time of year. And the star Metsuda will be very nearby, down and to the right as you're looking at it. Now, when you've located Mars, you'll notice that it's getting brighter. And it is, because Mars is approaching Earth for sort of a close encounter around the 18th. And for the next couple weeks plus after that, the red planet will you know, be getting brighter and bigger and even more conspicuous. A great target for backyard telescopes, and we'll have a nice Merry Martian Christmas this year, okay? All the comets, my God, P17 Holmes, still wowing astronomers around the planet. Now there's 8P Tuttle that's coming into play, and another one called C2007 Boitini. So three comets, you know, Holmes just blowing everybody's mind to this day. Just one thing after another up there at this point. So if you want to keep a close eye on all the comet stuff and the astrophysical happenings, Kent Stedman's website is the place to do that. That's at cyberspaceorbit.com. You can always link over to Kent's site from my site. Kent's also a regular participant over there in our forum, and just another, you know, just remarkable person who we're just, you know, really fortunate to have his friendship and his input into so many of these things. So anyway, his website's amazing, and he follows this stuff closer than anybody on the planet. Let's see. By the way, there is an amazing set of alignments happening in a few weeks, right around solstice time, right around the winter solstice through the 23rd, 24th of December. I mean, really, you'll have to check this out, and I'll talk about it a little bit more over the next few weeks, but certainly something to keep our eyes on. There, you know, talk about signs in the heavens. It really does seem to be sort of happening like that. It's very, very weird. But maybe I'm just weird. I guess that's sort of a given at this point. But Tuesday, tomorrow, today almost, 5 minutes from now, you'll have a crescent moon up and to the right of Venus, and you'll be able to see the star Spica. If you look to the southeast in the morning sky, Venus and Spica will just be a few degrees apart, maybe 5-6 degrees apart. On Wednesday, the crescent moon will be getting thinner. We call that a waning crescent when the crescent moon is getting smaller. We call it a waxing crescent when it's getting bigger. But the waning crescent moon will be below Spica on the 5th on Wednesday, and down to the lower right of Venus. And Venus will be really bright, of course, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours before sunrise. At the same time, this is when Mars will be up there in the western sky in the constellation of Gemini. Okay, and another, I get, there's one other note maybe for Thursday, it's kind of cool. You can look for the moon, I don't know, maybe a hand's width below the bright planet Venus on the 6th, on Thursday. You'll just have to look in the southeast in the morning sky, and you get a nice lineup between the moon and Venus. And there's something about a crescent moon and the planet Venus that, for me, I don't know, just I've always thought it was very pretty, if nothing else. So that's what's happening in the stars and the skies above your heads. And like I say, spaceweather.com does a great job of keeping up on some of this stuff. And Kent Stedman's site, certainly a nexus of information when it comes to these sorts of things, all right? That's cyberspaceorbit.com. All right. It is about 3 minutes before the hour of midnight now, almost the 4th of December. So we'll come back with Paco Algren in just a few minutes. He's the author of the book Discipline, and he has a lot to say about a lot of different topics, and we'll talk with him for the remainder of the program. In the meantime, we're going to hear some more from Anchando. This one is called My Old Lady. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.
Listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan. on KOPN 89.5 FM.
That is right. You are listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. And my name is Mike Hagan. My guest for the rest of the evening tonight is Paco Algren. Paco has worked as a financial analyst for 16 years. He spent the last two decades studying quantum physics and its implications on modern scientific, economic, financial, and psychological theories, as well as its dramatic similarities to Eastern philosophies and religions, most notably Taoism. Discipline is the name of his first novel. It's a confluence of all of these passions. And it's a pleasure to say hello tonight to Paco Algren. Hi, Paco.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Thank you for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Well, it is now the 4th of December. It's midnight. You're in the central time zone like me, so thank you for staying up late, first of all.
I probably would have been up anyway, Mike.
All right. Well, what I'd like to do before we get too deeply into our talk is do some background on you. We got plenty of time to talk tonight, so for people who aren't familiar with you and your work, and for myself, I'd like you to just take as much time as you like and tell us a little bit about who you are, where you came from, and how you got interested in, I guess the subject matter that you cover in your book, Discipline.
Well, where I came from and how I came up with Discipline, huh? I started as a musician years ago when I was in my late teens and early 20s. I was playing kind of folk punk in the southeastern United States, and I was traveling around in a band, with a band, and I was studying philosophy at the University of Alabama, mm-hmm. in English, and I dropped out of school to pursue music, and finally, after about 5 or 6 years of doing this, coming very, very close to getting a record deal, actually having a record deal and then having it pulled away, the band falling apart, I went back to school and I got involved with computers, really heavily involved with computers, and then ultimately involved in financial markets.
Where did you grow up? You said you were in school in Alabama. Where did you grow up?
In El Paso, Texas.
Okay.
And it was my whole family is from the South, from Memphis, Tennessee. So I had roots there, and so I was always going back and forth between El Paso and Memphis and other places in the South. And mm-hmm. I wound up in Alabama for uh-huh. about 3 years, uh-huh. which I don't necessarily recommend to anyone. I learned a lot there, though. And I guess that... After I had been studying philosophy at a surface level anyway. Mm-hmm. When I got into financial analysis, when I started getting, I was trading futures mm-hmm. in Austin, Texas. I had moved to Austin and had gotten involved with trading futures, and I didn't do very well. And one of the characters in my book, the main character in my book, actually, he trades futures.
Yeah, and, Douglas Cole, right?
Yeah, destroys his life trading futures,
right? Uh-huh, uh-huh. Is it sort of, we don't even have to go there yet, but is it in a way autobiographical?
I don't think that there's an author on Earth who doesn't write from a little bit of experience.
Right.
The number one question I get from people is your book autobiographical?
Mm-hmm.
I have to say it is, of course.
Yeah. Well, it's an intense book. I mean, and if it's autobiographical, you have an amazing story to tell, you know.
Thanks. And there are obviously parts of it that probably aren't autobiographical.
Right. We give you the literary license, they call it, right?
Right. After trading futures and studying finance and moving into, from finance, you have to, you can't study finance without studying economics.
Mm.
And I was studying practical economics, the study of the way the economy actually works, and then I wound up moving into theoretical economics, the way the economy could work, and
right.
I was studied socialism and free markets and the contrast, and it's really difficult to study these things, to get really entrenched in practical economics without going back full circle to philosophy.
Mm.
And that's when I really became entrenched. Modern philosophies of modern social philosophies, modern philosophies about valuation, how we value our subjective valuation of the universe.
Mm.
And then that took me into philosophies of science, which took me into quantum physics, and finally took me to Eastern philosophies. And all the connections between them were like a tidal wave pounding me.
Yeah, yeah. The whole quantum business and the Eastern thought is an amazing thing, actually, the parallels.
Yeah, yeah. So that was that was the foundation of everything. You know, it was all of these different things that I had experienced in my life, and not just experienced, but really become entrenched in. And ultimately, the things that I discovered from these experiences, the glaring discovery that I made was that these things are all connected, and nobody was pointing out these connections. Yes, there are some books about the connections between quantum physics and Eastern philosophy, but I'm aware of, there are no books about the connections between, say, Taoism and the way markets work.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
it was important to me that I figure out a way to get this out, and I spent some time trying to write nonfiction, and it worked. You know, I mean, I got it out, but it wasn't the format that I really wanted to present these ideas in, because anybody can write nonfiction. I really wanted this to be something that people wanted to read, wanted to absorb, that sucked them in and made them want to know more, the way it had always been for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in 2000 I started writing Discipline, and that's what came. You know, Discipline is a fast-paced thriller, and it seems, you know, when I was writing it, it sucked me in, and I was afraid that it wasn't going to translate, but apparently it has. I mean, people say that they just read it in two nights. And
yeah, it's a great, it's amazing. It's a pretty big book. I mean, it's, I don't know, I forget exactly, but I know it's 400-plus pages, right?
Yeah, 450 pages. The original, and Greenleaf, when they put the book together, they really squeezed it in there. They tightened up the margins and made the fonts pretty small, because I think realistically it's probably a 550-page book.
Yeah, but it reads fast, though.
The original draft was, I guess, 750 pages.
Amazing. And the publisher, I forget.
Greenleaf.
Yeah. Well, it's a very cool book and really well presented too. They did a great job with the printing of it.
Yeah, I was really lucky to find Greenleaf. I've had some mixed feelings about some of the reactions and some of the responses that I've gotten from going to a small press. But for somebody like me, it's the only answer. I mean, it really made a lot of sense.
Well, I mean, from what I see, they did a really good job. So if they're treating you well, then good for you.
Agreed.
Well, okay. A little bit more about you. Tell me more about your childhood, your parents.
I've never had a question like that before. I've done about 100 interviews in the last 5 months, and I don't know that I've ever had a question like that. Me and my parents, my father and I are still very close. He actually lives with me most of the time. I have a house in Durango, Colorado, and he is up there right now. And he's going to come to Austin. My little girl was born 5 days ago.
Wow.
Yeah, my first child. And so wow. I'm in Austin experiencing that. And he's,
congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a thrill. And I have two young children. I know from experience what it's like.
Yeah, I just wasn't prepared for the sheer magnitude. I've written this book about the connections between quantum physics, Eastern philosophy,
right.
modern philosophy, science, you know, all of this
right.
stuff that purports to be very deep. And then this little thing,
right.
this little creature that weighs 6 pounds, 7 ounces, sitting on my chest, sleeping, affects me in a way that I've never, ever been affected before in my life. And I didn't expect it. I never thought that would be affected like this.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing, and one of my old friends used to talk about, you know, we can go out and learn the epistemics of science and this and physics and this and that. He said, but there's nothing that comes close to what he called the felt presence of direct experience. You know, and with a child, I mean, it's just the most, I agree with you fully, it's the most amazing thing that's ever happened to me, too.
Yeah, it's, people always say that, you know, people, and it's always so banal and...
Yeah, but you just don't know until it happens, right? You got to do it.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, I had never planned to have children. This was something that kind of came out of the blue, and and I wasn't ready. I mean, I knew that it was what I wanted the mm-hmm. minute that it happened, but...
Right.
When I actually put her on my chest for the first time, it was I wasn't ready for it, because I tend not to accept things that are trite. And when you hear enough people say, "Well, it's just amazing, it'll just change your life," you know, after a while, I just kind of tune it out.
Right.
It certainly affected me that way.
Wow, well, that's cool. What do you mind me asking? What her name is?
Elizabeth.
All right. Well, I spoke with Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher just last week, and she's this amazing, you know, theoretical physicist, plasma physicist, nuclear physicist. She's all about this whole quantum business, you know. So.
Oh, really? I'm not familiar with her work.
Oh, she's brilliant. She's from she's 40-year veteran, PhD, Berkeley, worked at SRI, JPL, NASA, the whole gang. She,
no kidding.
Oh, yeah. She's wonderful, and currently doing some really cool work with a guy who I think is sort of on the edge. You know, there's so many people that are doing amazing work in physics right now, but this gentleman, his name is Nassim Haramein, and he's they have a project they call the Resonance Project. And at any rate, it's just another, you know, it's a group of very, very sharp physicists and scientific people, but combined with some very down to earth people that are looking at natural processes and the way that nature works, you know, and it's really a cool combination of stuff.
That's great. I every day I turn around and there's somebody else doing something like this.
Yeah.
It's always,
well, some of that comes through in your book even too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that was the point of the book, was to try to get these concepts out in a way that people could grasp them and not, you know, discipline never once that I can think of, makes you feel like you're being force-fed a theory that, you know, that's hard to grasp.
Mm-hmm,
it,
mm-hmm.
The whole point of the book was to be fast-paced and to make people, you know, read very quickly but want to know more,
right,
whereas
right.
a textbook just isn't going to do that for you.
Yeah. Well...
I should do the plug now, huh? Shouldn't I? DisciplineNovel.com.
Yeah, give the website, and you can give out your own as well. And they're all linked over there at my site, too. But please, any of the websites that you'd like to give out.
Yeah, DisciplineNovel.com will get you to everything. That's the one. Discipline Novel is all one word.
Okay, Discipline Novel, and also I think PacoAlgren.com, and you can link over to his blog and to MySpace and all that stuff over from my website as well, okay?
Yeah.
All right, the main character, this guy Douglas Cole, right? Well, first of all, before I even go there, I want to ask you about fear, because the book starts out, it's a frightening scene, actually, and very visual and really well done, but I think that you obviously chose it for a reason. I'd like to talk with you just about that emotion and why it's important in the book.
What aspect of it exactly was interesting to you? I assume that you read the whole book and that you got to the last five pages.
Yes.
So the...
You know, in the bathroom scene.
Right. The thing that readers don't know about the first scene of the book.
Yeah, I don't want to give it all away either, so...
Right. But that the last five pages make you have to read the first 10 pages again.
Again, right.
Yeah. The fear that you're talking about, the fear that Ellison is feeling
mm-hmm.
when he's in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And the abject fear, he's going crazy. He's seeing things that he shouldn't be seeing
right.
that don't make sense.
Voices in his head and all this.
He, up to this point in his life, he's been perfectly sane, and everything in his life has gone the way he expected it to go, and suddenly, in a couple of days, he slips over the edge and he starts seeing things he shouldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels like he's negotiating with his own mind. There's a vision of an old man, and the old man keeps taunting him and doing things to him, doing really despicable, horrible things to him. And Ellison doesn't quite know how to deal with it. He doesn't know how to negotiate with his own mind, if that's what it is. But the old man seems so real, and ultimately, Ellison just cracks, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, literally. All right. Well, I guess in a general sense, the book is about discovery, though, too, right?
Well, the whole thing, the whole book is just one big metaphor. I mean, it is about balance, and it is about spirituality, if you want to call it that, and it is about science, and it's about the fusion of science and spirituality.
Right.
It's about the idea that the universe is elegant, and the universe is complex, and the universe is simple, and the universe is chaotic.
And change, always changing.
Yeah, dynamic.
Right.
You read my latest blog, didn't you?
Yeah, and I want to talk about that, too. It's a great piece, actually, but it's directly related to the book, obviously.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard not to relate everything back to discipline in one way or another, but you know, the story is about tragedy, and Douglas Cole loses his entire family tragically. They all die, and he's left alone with a lot of money and a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And he does what you would expect him to do. He destroys his life, and two mentors pick him up. It's about enlightenment too.
And the most unlikely of characters, and the I love the use of chess,
right,
in the book, and I'd like to talk about that. Actually, I wasn't sure when to bring it up, but I think now's a good time, because the introduction between Mr. Stone, right,
Jefferson Stone and Douglas Cole, and Douglas is over a game of chess.
Yeah, happens over a game of chess, and then it happens again later in the book.
Yeah,
right, back in the year 20 or 23 or 22 or something like that.
Right, but it's the same meeting. We just come full circle.
Right. Please talk about that a little bit. And well, talk about chess first of all. Why you obviously like it, but it's a significant part of the book.
One of the topics that interviewers want to talk about, or television interviewers want to talk about most right now with me, is economic terrorism and financial terrorism.
Hmm.
And there's a huge aspect of that in discipline. The dollar fails, and the country is falling apart, and it's a result of economic terrorism. It's, you know, an organization is putting pressure on the dollar and driving down the dollar in order to create chaos.
Yeah, very real to the fact of the matter of what's happening right now.
Which is weird, because, you know, I wrote all of this long before any of this started happening.
Right, you began, seven years ago you began writing this book, right?
Right, exactly.
And when did you finish?
Well, I finished the first draft in 3 months, but so the story was intact in 3 months, but
right.
I finished the final draft in July, in June.
Right, amazing. Well, yeah, I mean, the parallels between some of the scenarios set in the book and what's happening actually in a physical sense right now on Planet 3 is actually amazing. And that's one of my notes, again, to talk about real world economics and the current situation. But we'll do that later in the program, I think, okay?
Yeah, that sounds fine. But you asked about chess.
Yeah.
And I wanted to kind of liken it to, you know, the whole chess metaphor is important to the story, because it illustrates... you know, chess is a very mathematical, complex game, but it has a very simple elegance to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so analogous to life, and so analogous to so many things in life, and the way that we look at the world. And so, what better thing to set the tone of the or the mood of the game, the book, the story around than a game of chess.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the characters in the book play chess throughout, and the way that I always, you know, when we start talking about economic and financial terrorism and how that relates to the book, I always say that I tell people the price of oil and the dollar right now are moving inversely, and the dollar is failing, and the price of oil is hitting new highs, new historical highs every single day.
Right, $100 a barrel now.
Yeah, and in real dollars, that's at an all-time high, or it's very close to it. And the idea is that there, you know, if you take a list of the top producing and top exporting oil countries in the world,
mm-hmm.
it's a veritable who's who of America's enemies. And to me, it's very interesting that oil has almost become a currency in and of itself.
Yeah.
The dollar is going down, and it's primarily because of oil, or it's a very big part of the reason the dollar is failing.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, these terrorists aren't stupid. They know what they're doing. They're just playing a game of chess. And in chess, one of the things that a very good player will do is he will create a big distraction in one part of the game. It'll cause you to focus on that,
mm-hmm.
and it's really not that big a deal, and yet you have all your energy focused on that, and he's doing something much more subtle, and yet much, much more damaging somewhere else.
On a different part of the board, yeah.
And I think that's what's happening right now. I really believe that there are people in the world, very smart people in the world, who are causing us to focus on things like airplanes crashing into buildings and trains blowing up, and buses blowing up. So, and while we have our attention focused on that, there's something much more subtle going on that we're not paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very frightening concept to me. And that's another big part of discipline. That's why I wrote the book.
Uh-huh. All right. Consciousness. Let's talk about that for a little bit, because being conscious is a big part of this whole thing too. At any point, and just the general sense of the differing levels of consciousness, you know, knowing what's happening in your own life.
Right. As it pertains to the universe and our role in the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Douglas is after Douglas loses his family, and he destroys his life with drugs and alcohol. He starts having hallucinations and begins to wonder whether or not they're hallucinations. He starts to see the same old man, and he starts to see things that he doesn't think he should be seeing. He starts to think he's going crazy.
Mm-hmm. A lot like Ellison at the beginning.
Yeah. And as he gets deeper into his own psychosis and his own collapse, his own destitution, the problems only become worse until he's at rock bottom. And some very strange things happen that cause him to shift his perspective and completely look at life from a totally new angle. And the two things that happen to him are so impossible and even improbable that he can't believe it, but he has no choice but to believe it. And
Will you tell the audience one of them? I'll let you choose, because I don't want to give away the book.
Douglas is sitting in a dumpster, and he's drinking the dregs out of beer bottles.
Mm-hmm.
He's vomiting on himself. He's crying. This voice is screaming in his head. He's been hallucinating all day. He's been smoking crack. He's just been molested by another junkie. He's just about as bad as he can. He's about as bad off as he could possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting in this dumpster, and he's begging the universe for help. Anything, anybody in the universe. He's talking to his dead family. He doesn't. There's nowhere left for him to go, really.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks across the dumpster, and something catches his eye. And it's a notebook. And his vision clears, and he sees that it's a notebook with a red cover, and it's very conspicuous, and it causes him to actually stop crying, and it makes him just freeze and stare at it, and he doesn't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And as his vision begins to clear, the notebook becomes becomes clearer in his vision. As I said, as his vision begins to... Is it pretty late? I'm having a hard time speaking. As his vision becomes clear, the notebook becomes more conspicuous. And he notices that there are words written on the front of the notebook.
Mm-hmm.
And he squints, and looks closer, and it's his name on the notebook. And I think I'll leave it there because it sets off a chain of events that causes him to reevaluate his entire life. And you were talking about consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Even after he comes out of this state, this destitution, he recognizes, he thinks that he's going to come out of this, and if he just makes all the right moves, if he goes into rehab, if he gets his life together, then he'll just be a normal human being again, and nothing could be farther from the truth. The people who have orchestrated his life and taken him to the point where he has collapsed this way, they're not about to let him off the hook that easy. He spends the next decade making realizations that consistently challenge his perception of the universe.
Huh. Yeah, and in fact, he doesn't realize that he's being manipulated and sort of moved through this whole thing by forces outside of himself.
Right. The whole first half of Discipline, except for the first chapter where, you know, where the old man is appearing and driving Ellison to insanity. With the exception of that short chapter, the rest of the whole first half of the book just reads like a normal kid's life. You know, the tragic downfall of a normal child. Nothing too weird happens. I mean, there are a couple of things that happen that are a little bit inexplicable, but even Douglas dismisses them as unimportant. He just says, I didn't understand it, and so I just let it go. But the second half of the book brings about the revelation.
Right, all the changes.
Yeah, the transition, and then suddenly you realize that he's not only, for the first half of the book, not only has he been manipulated by a group of people who want to destroy him and his family and every part of his existence. Their whole objective in the universe is to wipe him out and wipe every part of his existence out. There's also a group of people that have been protecting him the whole time,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to continue to try to protect him, and these are the revelations that he makes. These are the things he realizes, that his whole life he's been nothing more than a marionette for this kind of war that's being waged.
Again, the chess reference and being a pawn in a way.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And yet that's exactly what he thinks he is for most of the book. He thinks he's just a pawn, and he's consistently led to believe he's a pawn, and ultimately he finds out that he's not a pawn at all.
Right, right. Right, that he's actually as much in control as anyone can be of their own life.
Exactly.
Right.
And then he has to make the ultimate decision to give up control, almost completely give up control.
The surrender thing.
Yep.
All right. Well, I tell you what, it is the bottom of the hour. Let's take a little break here, and we'll play a little music, and we'll come back and talk a little more, okay?
Sounds fabulous.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Paco Algren. You can find information about him on the web at www.disciplinenovel.com. And you can also link over to his website, his blog, and his MySpace page over there at my site at mikehagan.com, okay? Again, Paco Algren, thanks for being here. The book is called Discipline. We'll be back with him in just a few minutes. In the meantime, let's play a piece of music here from Anchondo. This one is called Somewhere. And it's another good piece of music from a good new band out of Omaha, Nebraska. It's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. That's on Chondo, and that's a song called Somewhere. You're listening to it here on Radio Orbit, and let's get back to my guest. His name is Paco Algren. You can find information on the web at disciplinenovel.com, and you can also link over there directly from my site at mikehagan.com, and we'll get back to it. Hey, Paco.
You want to hear what people are saying on my MySpace page?
Yeah, please.
Here's what Christine says. Very cool, my dear. So why did you sound so Texan on your phone away message, and there's not a trace as I listen to you on the radio? Breathe, and this is the best one. Breathe, you're doing fine. Take it slow, even though the brain is racing. Apparently you're making me nervous.
Yeah, it's funny. You get all this advice from the people listening. It's great. You know, the technology is actually amazing. As I'm talking to you right now, I'm on my my chat. In my chat room that I have at my site. And there's, 10 or 15 people over there that are throwing up questions and chatting amongst themselves, and the whole thing's going on right in the midst of this. I just love it, you know?
I sent out a bulletin right before we started. I'm sure that a lot of those people are my retinue that are just dying to say anything they can to bring me down.
I see some regulars, and I see some new ones, too. So
here's what Cindy started the Paco Algren fan club.
Uh-huh.
She says, "Oh my God, I'm listening. Now I understand Elizabeth's cello. Oh my God, congratulations." She says, "Loosen up just a bit. Tell a joke. Sounds great." So I'm going to tell a joke now.
All right, do it. And then I'm going to ask you about the cello, because I got other people that are asking about the cello. So you tell me a joke, though, first.
I don't know any. All the jokes that I know have the F word in them. I'm not going to mess with them.
All right, then I'll ask you about the cello. I'll ask you about the cello. But one of my listeners says, ask Paco if he really plays the cello. I love the cello.
I do play the cello a little bit. I try to stay away from it. My dad says that when I play the cello, it sounds like cats having sex. So I try to avoid that.
Wow. Depends on the cats, I guess.
Because I don't want my dad to be subjected to that. One of my closest friends in the world and I have been playing music together for about 20 years, maybe about 15, 17 years. Mm-hmm. And his name is Joey Santori. You can hear there's links from my site. I think the music on my site, he plays on a lot of that. But he and I play together now and again. I think we're going to do one show in Austin in January. And Joey is an incredible cellist.
Huh.
Just an amazing cellist. And a lot of the music that I write is for the cello and guitar. And I actually wrote a song called Elizabeth's Song, which I haven't. I have a very rough copy that I recorded with him,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't let anybody else. I haven't put it out yet.
Yeah, for your daughter.
And I hope that it's going to be the soundtrack for the Discipline movie.
Wow, cool. So, there's talk about a movie, or
there is. There's several things in the works right now. A couple of movie companies have gotten in touch and tried to buy the rights, but I'm a little reluctant to do it because I just don't trust anybody.
Mm, yeah, you're probably smart about that, actually.
I think I'm going to wait a while and see how it goes.
Why did you choose the name Discipline for the book?
Triple entendre. I don't know if I sounded like a Texan when I said that just now.
It's your name for a band, the Texan Triple Entendre. I can't even say it.
You can't even say it. Yeah, discipline is self-imposed or externally imposed rules, regulations. Discipline is a school of thought, or discipline is punishment. Douglas Cole goes through. Douglas Cole experiences all of this in the book many, many times in many different
right, all kinds of different scenarios. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where that came from.
Okay. All right. Do you want to talk about Jack Alexander and his and all? I have a note about him, but I don't know if he's a character that you'd like to mention his significance or.
Jack, there are three significant characters in Discipline. One is Douglas Cole, obviously the main character. The other one is Jefferson Stone, who is the stoic older kind of mentor,
teacher.
And I love the phrase Tom Waits in a song or in one of his poems said. Talked about razor sadness, and Jefferson seems to have that razor sadness about him that you can't you can't really pinpoint. And I'm the only person on Earth who really, really knows why he's sad, and I guess that everybody else will find out in the sequel.
Right.
Jack Alexander is the avuncular figure that is with Douglas through his whole life. Jefferson isn't with Douglas through his whole life.
Right, he sort of comes and goes and shows up in the strangest of times, yeah.
Right, and Douglas doesn't even meet Jefferson until he's 18 years old, whereas Jack has been in Douglas's life since he was born.
Yeah, in fact, saved his life when he was a young boy.
Yeah, and then served as kind of surrogate father after his own father was killed.
Mm-hmm.
His father and his brother were killed, and Jack has the filthy sense of humor, and he Jack is always funny. He's always light, and he's always he doesn't care about anything. He's very jocund and very uninhibited. And he's so funny and lighthearted that for a long time in the book you don't even realize what he's capable of, and then when you do, you realize that he's got this fire behind him, this anger behind him that's almost uncontrollable,
right.
And that he's as funny as you think he is. He's he's the most dangerous of the three,
right?
The most volatile.
Yeah. All right.
I run my microwave. Will the FCC get mad at me if I do that?
No, I don't think so.
I need coffee.
Yeah, go for it. You want to take a break and I'll play a piece of music?
Play some music.
Yeah, I'll do it. And we'll come back and we'll talk in a few more minutes, all right?
Okay.
All right, hang in there. Go get a cup of coffee and I'll be back with Paco Algren in just a few minutes, everybody. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And I think there's some people that are trying to call in, too. We'll have to ask Paco if he wants to take a couple phone calls after the break, but we'll see. All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And this is on Chondo, and the song is called Downtown, exactly where we are now.
Take me to the land where the skin of souls are dead, the valley of the hilltops, and I swear to you, I'll do the best that I can in making your body feel it. And oh yeah, wow, my brother, I'm gonna feel my now. Wow, my brother, I'm going down, right between the everlasting fantasy. Oh yeah, wow, my brother, I'm gonna feel my now. Wow, my brother, I'm going down, your body. Oh,
This is Tony Friedman with your official Chuck Norris moment. Chuck Norris's version of a chocolate milkshake is a raw porterhouse and a slab of bacon wrapped around 10 Hershey bars and doused in diesel fuel. This has been Tony Friedman with your official Chuck Norris moment. Hi, this is Tony Friedman with your official Chuck Norris moment. Chuck Norris built a time machine and went back in time to stop the JFK assassination. As Oswald shot, Chuck met all three bullets with his beard, deflecting them. JFK's head exploded out of sheer amazement. This has been Tony Friedman with your official Chuck Norris moment.
All right, a couple of official Chuck Norris moments for your edification there. And you listen to it on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. My guest is Paco Algren. He's the author of a book called Discipline, and an interesting fellow who has a lot of interesting experiences that we're talking with him about tonight. And we'll get right back there to him after I give you his website. It's www.disciplinenovel.com. And you can link there directly from my site as well, okay? Hey, Paco, you've traveled a lot. Is that right?
I have.
Why don't we talk about some of the experiences that you've had in travel and then maybe, you know, relate them to the book or not. I'm not that particularly interested in, you know, continually relating everything to the book. I'll tell people that it's a great book and they should check it out. But I'd like to know just a little bit more about, you know, where some of this stuff come from.
Well, I've spent a lot of time in the Four Corners in the United States, which I guess doesn't really constitute traveling too much, but there's a spirituality about it that I don't think that a lot of people in the United States are really completely aware of. The Southwest, especially the Native American cultures as they relate to the Southwest in the United States, is amazing. It's when you combine all of the spirituality of the West, especially the Southwest, and you combine that with the vistas and the dryness of it, the lack of humidity, and when you put all of these elements together, there are very few people that I know who can spend time out in the desert and spend time out in the mountains, call it in the Rockies, and not go through some sort of a spiritual transition. Mm-hmm. It's almost guaranteed.
Yeah, I lived in Colorado for 15 years after growing up in the Chicago area, and my time in Colorado was certainly a transformative time for me, sure.
Where'd you live in Colorado?
I lived in Denver for the most part, but you mentioned Durango, but I have good friends in Walsenburg and a place called Gardner that's it's in the southwest part of the state, more where it gets looking sort of arid and New Mexico like, you know, by the Sangre de Cristo River.
Yeah.
Back that way, but anyway, I love the whole state. And I've had experiences there, too, that have been profound, for sure, in the mountains and alone in the woods and things like that.
Probably the most, somebody else wrote on my face. Well, Christine, again, wrote and told me that I sound nervous. Do I sound nervous to you, Mike?
No, you sound fine.
No, and somebody else got mad at me for turning on the microwave because it's taking away from her. Nikki said it's taking away from her sleep time.
Ah, well. Maybe they're nervous.
Yeah, maybe so. I'm coughing a lot. The other really spiritual experience that I've had traveling is in Mexico. I've spent a lot of time in Mexico.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially in Chiapas, down in southern Mexico, mm-hmm. and a lot of the Mayan ruins, a lot of the Mayan culture that still exists. And then that coupled with the colonial Spanish architecture down there, and just the traditions and the mixing of these, the Aztec and Mayan and Incan cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Not Incan, I'm sorry. Just Aztec and Mayan cultures in southern Mexico. You'll find a spirituality there that I can't, again, I'm very hard, I have a hard time
putting words on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, no, I'm actually really interested in that stuff because I'm not sure how familiar you are with this program or not, maybe not at all, but we frequently talk about, you know, the natural world and shamanic cultures and visionary plants and people that have different relationships to the world than we sort of have typically here in the West, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have done I didn't know about your show before we were scheduled to do an interview, but I did some research on your site and kind of looked into what it was all about just to find out where we would steer the conversation most beneficially to your audience.
And
I was pretty fascinated by some of the things that you've explored and some of the things that you espouse. And certainly it fits in with a lot of discipline, the book discipline.
Yeah, it really does, actually, and including some of these ideas of modern physics and stuff. Maybe we could talk a little bit about, since we're talking about philosophies and things, you spoke about it a little bit earlier, but you make this direct connection and, or bring it to the fore, the connection between Taoism and quantum physics, for example. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
It's the duality that, I mean, there are a lot of different elements, both disciplines that are glaring, but it's the duality that strikes me the most. Quantum physics, you have the fact that we can't know the velocity and position of a particle at the subatomic level without changing either the velocity or the position. So we can only know one or the other. We can't know both simultaneously.
Right.
And there's no scientific device that will allow us to know. So we have to speak of particles at the subatomic level as dualities, as probabilities. And that, to me, is, you know, if you read Taoist text or dogma, I hate to use that word, but that's what it is, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
You see a lot of references to contradictions, these ideas that are apparently contradictory, and yet they exist in harmony in the universe. And that's really what comes to light in subatomic physics, this idea that something can be a particle and a wave at the same time, and yet it can't. There's just no way that can be possible. That blog that I wrote the other night, it speaks to this a lot. And you bring this into some of the other things that I've been immersed in for the last 2 decades, financial markets, the chaos of financial markets, the inability to walk in and predict anything with any degree of exactitude over a long period of time, and especially in a short period of time, and yet markets are elegant, and over the very long term you can predict with some degree of accuracy what's going to happen.
And
that duality, again, subatomic physics, modern philosophies of science, modern philosophies of finance and economics, these things tie in together so elegantly, and people just don't see it.
Do you think that it's meant not to be seen?
I don't know. I try to stay away from the word meant. The word meant and should kind of keep them out of my vocabulary.
Yeah, they're sort of loaded, I guess, anytime you use it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think things are meant or not meant. I talk about, in discipline, I talk about the suchness of the universe a lot, the way things are, rather than the way things should be or the way we interpret things. I talk about direct experience a lot, about the idea, and I talked about this in the blog the other night, that we can't possibly know everything in the universe, because we're interpreting everything. Everything that we see is just photons hitting our eyes. It's not the thing itself. We can't be the thing. We can only experience interpretations of the thing. So I don't know what's meant to be and what's not meant to be. All I know is that I'm moving through this universe, and I try to exist in it at the most peaceful level as possible. Now, do I know what that is? No, I don't. Am I in touch with God or Buddha or whoever? No. I mean, I just take it day by day and try to get through it. And I get in a lot of trouble on a lot of spiritual shows because people are always trying to define what it is. And my answer is always, what is it? I think it's more important to find out what it's not than to try to figure out what it is.
Yeah, I think there's a certain open-endedness. You better be willing to accept that there's no closure, really. In other words, right? I mean, it seems like you're saying something like that, that you just, I mean, God, my God, we're just talking monkeys on this little stone here. I mean, where is it writ that we're supposed to have the secrets to the universe under our belts or whatever, you know?
You know, we've all been without even knowing what logical positivism is, we are all victims of the idea that we need to prove that something is.
Mm.
We need to establish, we need to argue that something is. And you know, Karl Popper, who is my biggest hero, who I quote all the time and who is biggest influence on discipline, is, you know, his big theory, and I wrote about this in a blog not too long ago as well, was falsification, that you're going to live a much cleaner, much more philosophically honest life if you just stick to the things that are not. If you just falsify things that are obviously not true, or if you continuously try to falsify things that are claimed and purported to be true. If you constantly spend your time trying to falsify those things rather than trying to prove that something is true, you know, trying to prove something is true is like trying to build a statue out of marbles. It just keeps coming down. And I found much more peace. And again, you know, this is another one of those connections that nobody's ever made. I find a lot more peace when I combine Popperian critical rationalism and the idea that we should be falsifying theories that that everyone is claiming to be correct. And if they stand to the test of reason, then we can accept them tentatively.
Mm.
How that connects with Taoism so elegantly that, you know, just live your life and live your life as a skeptic, almost. You know, just let things come to you rather than trying to make things happen all the time. And it's, you know, these connections are very glaring.
And everything is sort of conditional. In other words, any position can be abandoned at any moment.
No, I mean, I can see why you would go there. It's not that you want to abandon a position at any moment. Well, you know what? Yes, I see what you're saying.
In other words, you might not, but you can if the evidence tells you to or something, you know.
You absolutely should if the evidence tells you to. Mm-hmm. Again, if a theory turns out not to be valid or good, then we want to abandon it, and we want to abandon it quickly, yes.
But it seems like that...
I thought you were saying something else.
Right, but there's a tendency in, you know, orthodoxy and establishment not to do that. We tend to try to... institutions want to hold on, it seems, to old ideas, whether they're still legitimate or not.
Right, and that's the idea of logical positivism, that we're going to try to prove something is right rather than prove something wrong.
Show that it's wrong, right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's certain things like, look, you know, if this happened and it's not predicted by the theory, then the theory's wrong, you know, or it's certainly missing something.
Right.
Interesting. All right. What about your publicist or one of the assistants or whatever that I spoke to today was talking about modern social theories, and you mentioned that a little bit earlier. That ties in as well with these things. You want to talk about that just for a few minutes before we take a break?
Sure, yeah. Leslie was the one who said that.
Yeah, Leslie.
Talking about that a little earlier. She said I should either talk about porn or modern social theories.
Well, they're sort of tied in together, I guess.
There's my joke.
It's pretty good one, actually.
Joke. Is everybody happy?
There you go.
modern social theories. I think that, you know, there's a lot of... Again, we would have to go back to Karl Popper and his idea of the open society. I think that would be the place to start. The idea that...
For people who aren't familiar...
Yeah, Karl Popper. Sir Karl Popper is the philosopher that I've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He's the modern philosopher of science. But his theories were very social as well. He had an idea that he called the open society. And the idea of the open society is that you have, instead of having centralized, monopolistic, huge centers of power, you would actually have thousands or even more, hundreds of thousands of small centers of power that competed against one another for validity, and so it would be what we were talking about earlier, falsification, live in a social context where you would have municipalities or economic zones or whatever you want to call them, and each of them would be testing different theories. One of them might be testing the idea that drugs should be legalized and everybody should be allowed to do heroin if they want to, and other ones might say no, we're not going to have any drugs, and then you'd very quickly figure out which theory is best, and everyone would adopt the better theory.
I see, yeah. And if you got these going on all over the place, you can sort of, the cream rises to the top.
Exactly, and, you know, this is, when I talk about economic terrorism and I talk about how vulnerable we are, I'm often talking about how terrorists, if terrorists are playing a better game of chess, what they're doing is they're looking at us. It used to be that Washington versus Moscow or Washington versus Berlin or whatever, Now it's not true anymore. Terrorists are like wasps, and they sting us from all different directions, and they might be stinging us in ways that we can't even predict because they're decentralized. Mm-hmm. There is no enemy that we can see anymore. It's
right.
The ultimate guerrilla warfare.
Right.
And our problem is that we are centralized. You know, terrorists don't hate Omaha. Terrorists hate Washington.
Mm-hmm.
They hate New York.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're centralized, and power is so congregated that we're vulnerable. We're extremely vulnerable. It's the proverbial eggs being in one basket.
Huh.
So these modern social theories that I talk about, and what I talk about in Discipline with the deconstruction of the Federalist model,
yeah,
back to the Jeffersonian,
uh-huh,
decentralized model, that's really when I get into social theories, that's really what I'm talking about,
right,
the shifting of the paradigm, which,
right,
which is coming whether
you like it or not.
Whether we do it the easy way or the hard way.
Right, right. Something's going to give. All right, look, good place to take a little break, okay? Hey, I've got a couple people that have been calling, and I wondered if you want to take a couple phone calls.
Oh, yeah, that would be fun.
I mean, we'll just open the line. If people call, we'll talk. If not, you know, we can come up with our other... I've got plenty of other things to ask you, but...
Yeah, give them the phone number. They're all listening over the Internet.
Yeah.
They're all dying to make fun of me.
Right.
I know that there are about four people who are just aching to make fun of me right now.
Well, we'll say hello to all the people in the chat room there and give the phone number out. It is area code 573-443-8255. Give me a call on that line, and you can say hi to Paco and ask him a question.
Well,
and
what was the number?
It's 573-443-8255.
Perfect.
All right? And we'll play a piece of music, then we'll come back, all right?
Sounds great.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Paco Algren. He's the author of a book called Discipline, and he's interested in a lot of other topics as well. And we're talking with him about, oh, all kinds of different things tonight. We'll come back and do some more of that in just a few minutes. In the meantime, let's listen to... let's see. Paco mentioned porn. What do I got that... How about She-Devil? It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
Like
on Chondo. That one's called She Devil. That's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Paco Algren. He's the author of a book called Discipline, on the web at disciplinenovel.com. And the music, by the way, you can find information about Anchondo on the web at anchondo.com. That's A-N-C-H-O-N-D-O. And you can link there, of course, from my music archives and on the MySpace business and all that, okay? So Anchondo, kick-ass music, great stuff. And Paco Algren, great author with a great book. And we've got somebody on the line with us here, probably. So, Paco, let me say hello to you again, and thank you for sticking around.
And thank you for having me so late.
Oh, you're welcome, man.
I can't believe anybody would want to talk to me this long.
Well, somebody does, and we'll say hello to them right now. Who's here with us?
Well, good morning. My name is Cindy.
Hi, Cindy. How's it going?
It's real good. How about with you guys?
Pretty good. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Hi, Paco.
Hi, Cindy. How are you?
Real good. You probably are a little bit familiar with me, huh?
I'm sorry?
Maybe you're familiar with me, I don't know.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I probably sent you some emails, I don't know. Anyway, I have a really interesting question. It's kind of off base and a little weird, but maybe you can answer it for me.
Shoot.
In times of stress with recession and depression and things like that, I have read that back in the 60s and things like that, that the fashion changed. Like in war times, you know, the miniskirt came in fashion with that. Economics changed as well. Have you been following that today in 2007? And if so, what do you see that kind of parallels with things like that? Do you follow things like that? And if so, I'd love to hear about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Cindy.
Thanks.
Thank you, Cindy. That's a good question. I have heard a little bit. I did a lot of research into the Great Depression in the late 1920s that stretched into the 30s and then, you know, ultimately we didn't get out of until World War II. And it's actually very interesting that, at least what I've read, and I mean, I didn't delve too much into it because, frankly, that's not what I was interested in, not the aspect anyway, but I did come across it a few times, and it's interesting that in the early 20s, and you know, when the country was just partying post-World War I, and everything was crazy, 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 the stock market was booming, and everybody was living free, fashion became very risque. Mm. Women and men both started dressing more
liberally.
With a lot more risk.
Yeah.
What is the word I'm trying to find?
Provocative.
Provocatively. Thank you so much. I need a thesaurus. You guys don't mind if I do this?
That was nice. Very, very good choice of words, Cindy. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, that was a nice addition.
Yeah. The same is true in the post-World War II era. Yeah. The thing that's kind of weird about post-World War II is that it didn't happen in the 50s, and that was really the golden era. That was when everything was about as economically as good as it can be, and it did happen in the 60s, and the economy was still pretty good in the 60s. It was actually very good in the 60s. It wasn't as good as the roaring 20s, but that's when things got nutty again in terms of fashion and social norms and the sexual revolution. In the 70s, after the 1973-74
oil downturn, right.
We had oil and you had a stock market fall, we went into recession.
Mm-hmm.
The trend continued. It didn't stop like it did in the 30s and 40s, and it didn't stop again until the Reagan era, until the 80s, when we became more conservative again.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be very interesting. That's a really good question. I would be really interested to see where fashion and where social norms are going to go now that we are kind of spiraling downward. We're not in recession yet, but a lot of people are predicting that we're going to be, and I tend to agree, unless we get our handle on the price of oil. And
Well, I'm sure hoping for a return of the mini skirt.
I think you're gonna see it. I follow the fashions myself with magazines and whatnot, and you know, you can see it, you know, today on MTV and things like that, and the different channels, and you know, the bikinis and whatnot, and all that, and especially with the body form, with everybody getting so waist skinny now. Mm. Everybody's looking at like size 2 is like fat. It's like, get out of here, you know, whatever.
Yeah, win. All right, well, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Paco. Thank you so much, Mike.
All right, take care of yourself, all right? Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Let's take another one here, Paco, and then I've got a couple other for you, all right? Good evening. You're in orbit. Who's this?
Hey, Hey, this is Chris calling from Jacksonville. Is Paco still there?
Hey, he is. Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Paco. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Chris?
Oh, not too bad. I was just wondering, you're working on a new book, correct?
I'm trying to work on a new book. I have one or two things going on right now, as you're well aware of.
Yes, I am. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I told you it would be a life-changing experience when you started holding that little one.
All right, Chris. I should have listened to you.
I was just wondering, do you think that now that you're a parent, that's going to affect or change how you look at or approach the next book?
That's funny that you would ask that. I was actually thinking of putting. Yeah, there's no question about it. It's going to affect the way that I write the next book immensely. I think that there are things that are going to happen in the next book that are wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Well, I'm looking forward to it because I keep telling everybody how good discipline is, and I'm just waiting for the next one to come out.
Chris, you're the best. People keep asking me, and Mike and I were talking about this a minute ago, or a little while ago, and people keep asking me how much of the book is autobiographical, and I told him that there is no writer who writes and doesn't put some of his or her own experience into the book. That's just not possible, I don't think. Maybe it is, but I don't believe that. There's so much of discipline that is part of. I mean, it was literally 30 years of experience that helped me write that book. And a lot of times, I get scared because I don't know that I have that much more unique experience to put into the next one. And then something like what happened to me 5 days ago happens, and I realize, you know, it may take a little while to finish the sequel if I want to do it right. But there's always something more.
Well. Like I said, good luck with this little one and with the new book, and just keep in touch as you can.
I will, Chris. You know I will.
I appreciate it, man. Enjoy the cigars. You got to pass them out.
I will. Thank you. I've already passed out quite a few, Chris.
Okay. Let me know if I can do anything to help out.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening, Chris.
Sure. Chris, bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
Chris is a good friend. Chris found out about discipline, I think, through MySpace. I can't remember exactly how we met, but... He has been, he's stuck with me for a while now and kind of offered me a lot of support and friendship when I needed it. He's
wow, that's
guy.
Awesome. Yeah, it's amazing. Again, the ability of our individual selves to connect and communicate with people now is amazing to me. I mean, the fact that we're getting calls here from Jacksonville, I'm guessing that's Florida.
It is. I have so many good friends through this book. I mean, I answer literally 250 or 300 emails a day now.
Uh-huh.
But I have this core group of friends that I talk to all the time, and without them, I don't know what I would be right now.
Right.
I mean, they keep me alive through all of this.
Wow.
And a lot of them are in the chat room right now.
Yeah, well, it's awesome, and I'm pleased that they're all listening to the program tonight. So, all right, let me ask you a question about immortality. Do you even have a position on it? There are intimations of it throughout the book.
Yeah, it's actually a question that comes up a lot,
mm-hmm.
And I do believe in immortality. I believe that science is already on the cusp of creating a situation where we can get back to our prime and stay there.
Mm.
Genetically, our cells are programmed, for whatever reason, they're programmed to our cells are programmed to slow their division process to the point that it just stops. And there are some cells that don't do that, but most of our cells do, and that's mm-hmm. that's why we decay and die, and mostly it's our immune system that kills us.
Mm-hmm. Our own immune system.
Yeah. I mean, it's the inability to ward off disease and ward off things like cancer. People don't usually consider cancer a disease of immunity, but it really is. That's why
sure.
it tends to happen in older people rather than younger people, because your immune system is integral in the fight against cancer,
mm-hmm.
or in the prevention of cancer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's actually a gene that tells our cells to slow their division and to stop dividing. And they've isolated it, and they can theoretically turn this gene off. And if that's true, then we would revert to our prime, or we would grow to our prime
and then
state.
Stop there. Yeah, yeah.
And personally, I would love to have that gene therapy.
Yeah, I'm certainly interested in it for sure. I'm 43 years old. I'm thinking, man, but you know, pretty. I actually interviewed. You may be familiar with Ray Kurzweil.
I'm familiar with the name. I'm not familiar with
him. He's sort of a futurist and an inventor and a very handy type of person, but he's a very wise guy who seems to be ahead of the curve. He has a historical record that's pretty good when it comes to sort of looking at future trends and that sort of stuff, you know?
Right.
Well, anyway, he has a partner in a book that's called Fantastic Voyage. And it's essentially about the new technologies that are being applied in medicine and health care, gene therapy and all this stuff, that this is what they're actually saying, is that we're very close to having the capability to do exactly what you're talking about. And these are, you know, very serious scientific types of people that are saying this stuff, you know.
Right.
So, wow. I guess if we can just hold the thing together long enough, that seems to be the challenge, because the duality gets you on both sides, because we have this technology that's allowing us to approach immortality, perhaps, but at the same time, you know, we still have stockpiles of hydrogen bombs and things that are just threatening the whole business.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, you talk about the duality, yeah. The fact that we can extend life so far, life expectancy at the turn of the 20th century, the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, was 41, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Life expectancy today is 72.
Yeah, close to double, yeah.
And we found more efficient ways to kill ourselves.
Amazing. All right, my guest is Paco Algren on the web, www.disciplinenovel.com. If you want to hop on the telephone and give us a call, we'd be glad to chat with you for a few minutes. The number is 573-443-8255. All right, Paco, let's talk about economics for a little while here. Real world economics, and we can relate back to the book, because it is remarkable, actually, the parallels between some of the scenarios that occur in the book and what I see in the real world today. But maybe you could just give us your general wrap about economics and the world of 2007.
You talk about real world economics, and we can certainly talk about that. When I started writing Discipline, mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff that's going on today was not going on, but the reason that I wrote about it was because I thought that it might start to
right.
happen.
I mean,
and when I talk about, you know, when you say real world economics, I don't know how much you want to get into the theoretical part of Discipline, even though I consider that to be real world economics. It, mm-hmm. it may not be what you're talking about. We can talk about the price of oil and the price of gold and the collapse of the dollar versus the euro and the yuan and the yen, and those things are real. But I'm much more interested in the reason they're happening, and what we talked about earlier, the notion that the biggest oil producers and exporters in the world are our enemies, for the most part, and that they know that we're the biggest oil consumer in the world,
mm-hmm.
and they know that that we are dependent on them for oil. So they know that we're going to be buying oil from them no matter what happens, and yet they have absolutely no apologies about crushing the dollar. And I think that they're doing it on purpose. And I think that we're dealing with it in the best way we can, because the dollar is so cheap, it makes our goods cheap around the world, and it makes foreigners want to buy our goods more than they have historically. It's the only thing propping up our economy right now. I mean, you have the subprime crisis. You have houses, more houses on the market than in the last four decades. You have housing starts down. You have people defaulting left and right. And in normal circumstances, the economy, it just couldn't survive something like this, I don't think.
Right. I mean, I actually read the news, you know, the financial news, and for months now, actually, since the whole subprime explosion happened, which I don't even think has been nearly fully realized yet. And I think that the fallout is going to be, I mean, who the hell knows? But I'm amazed at what's holding the whole thing together. I can't believe that the Dow Jones is still 13,000 plus or whatever. I think it's insanity is what I think it is, actually.
Yeah, the only reason that the economy is surviving is, and the reason that the Dow is floating. I mean, we've just been through a 10% correction in the Dow, which we probably desperately needed. But the only reason it's surviving is because our firms, our goods and services are in such high demand around the world because they're so much cheaper. Mm. Europe is actually very worried, even though the euro is strong against the dollar. Europe is very worried about its own economy because Europeans are buying American goods right now.
Right.
They're propping up our economy. Mm. Now, this is really good in the short term. In the long term, what we face is inflation. And we saw that in Mexico in the late 70s and early 80s with the devaluation of the peso.
Mm.
And if that happened here, the difference between Mexico and the United States is that we're innovative. We invent everything, and that's not going to change. And we have a lot of resources, and we also have a middle class. So we're not likely to see what happened with the peso happen to the dollar, I don't think. I hope.
Remember what happened to Argentina just a few years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got to... We're off the gold standard, so there's nothing backing our currency.
Right, we have this fiat currency that we talk about sometimes on the program that's certainly problematic.
Sure. And we have no alternative. This is what I tell people when they start talking, you know, nobody thinks I'm crazy. In discipline, the characters create an alternative private currency, and they back it by precious assets.
Yeah.
And people think that's, you know, that's great fiction. And
hell, that's the smartest thing we could do.
This is what I always tell people. If you think that's so crazy, I want you to pull a dollar out of your wallet, and I want you to tell me what that dollar's worth, because it's not worth anything except for the psychology behind it.
Right.
There's no gold. Right. It's just paper.
Right.
And I want you to tell me, when that dollar fails, when the price of oil goes to $200 a barrel, which I don't think it's going to do, but if it did, if these cartels were able to maintain their chokehold without violating each other's agreements, which they won't do. The Saudis proved that they won't do it in the 1980s.
Right.
And when oil lost 80% of its value in 3 weeks because the Saudis cheated.
Yeah, they just opened up the spigot.
Yeah. That's going to happen again, probably. I mean, people think there's not a lot of oil out there. There's a lot of oil.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of manipulated scarcity or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. The price of gasoline at the pump right now is a totally manipulated, artificial price.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for it to be this high except for all of our enemies hate us and are trying to kill the dollar. That's exactly what's happening.
Huh.
But
what do you make of the Federal Reserve and their part in the whole thing? I mean, are they between a rock and a hard place? No pun intended.
Well, they are. If you're talking about their quest to both keep the economy out of recession and to fight inflation, I mean, right now it's almost the perfect storm. Inflation is bumping up there, and they don't want to lower interest rates, and the economy is starting to go into recession. So they do want to lower rates to get the economy to keep the economy out of recession, but they don't want to lower rates because that could
affect the dollar. Yeah.
And so they
and drive the dollar further down, right?
Right. Which is, I guess
that's by definition. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
So. Yeah, they're in a tough spot, and I don't envy Bernanke. He's got a really tough job right now. Mm. I watch him all the time, and I think, man, just grow your hair long and stop showering and write a book. That's what I did.
Yeah, no doubt, man. He'd be better off for it, I think. He'd probably live longer.
do obscure radio programs.
I'll have him on the show. I'd love to talk to him. You know? Bring him on. all right, I should look at my phone to make sure it's not ringing. Okay.
I'm sure it's just ringing off the hook.
Yeah, probably people have been calling. I haven't even been looking at it. But anyway, area code 573-443-8255 if you want to give us a call and chat for a few minutes, okay? I think what we'll do, I'm going to ask you a strange question that just came up, though, all right?
Okay.
Before we take a break. Mike, ask Paco if he knows anything about alternative energy. For example, hydrogen on-demand fuel from water. In other words, there's all kinds of different alternative ideas that are out there that are percolating up, and not, this is just one of them. Are you familiar with any of that type of stuff?
I mean, yeah, as familiar as anybody is. I mean, I don't specialize in it, but I know enough about it to know that it's interesting. But, I mean, do you want me to answer now, or do you want to play music?
No, you can answer it now. I mean, I'm just sort of curious because, and I'll sort of preface the question, because I'm thinking that there's this outbreak of creativity almost everywhere in all these different fields, including, you know, writing and art and creativity. Imagination just seems to be exploding everywhere. And I sort of apply that, I sort of assume that it applies everywhere, including the places where we are told that it doesn't apply because of maybe, you know, political agenda or powerful corporations or whatever. So I've always, or at least recently, I've begun to sort of think that the alternative energy scenario, maybe it's not as bleak as we might think, but we're just not getting the information that we might if it were freely being available, you know, if everyone was being honest about it.
I think that there's a lot of merit to what you just said. I also think it's a little bit of both. I mean, there's no question that the oil lobby is huge. There's no question that there are entities out there in Washington and around the world that want to see oil survive as the dominant fuel source in this earth. So I'm going to preface everything I'm about to say with that, because I agree with that. You can't deny that. These people do not want to lose the stranglehold that they have on us. So they're going to fight for it. Having said that, these alternative fuel sources do exist, but they're not cost effective. And even if oil went away tomorrow, I believe that these fuel sources would be explored, and we would probably come up with something relatively quickly, but it wouldn't be. Here's the problem. There's nothing cheaper. I want you to put a stack of stones, 3 tons of stones, at the bottom of a hill, and I want to tell you, a physicist did this to me one time, and it made me shut up, because I asked the same question that you were just asking. He said, I want you to put 3 tons of stones at the bottom of the hill, and I want you to tell me how to get those stones up to the top of the hill.
Uh-huh.
He said, you can put them on people's backs, you can get horses, you can do whatever you want. You will never find a cheaper, more efficient form of getting those stones up a hill than putting a gallon of gas in a combustion engine and driving it to the top.
Mm.
It's just unbelievably inexpensive to do this. And no matter what anybody tells you, oil is really, really abundant. There's a ton of it out there.
Yeah.
And there's so much of it that hasn't even been explored yet. As long as that's true, things aren't going
to
change.
Yeah, I thought that the peak oil thing was sort of another scam just to pump the price up and keep people frightened, and just another boogeyman thing.
Oh, absolutely, and that's unsustainable. Again, I go back to the 80s. The price of oil sitting at $100. I think the price of oil could go to 110. I don't doubt it at all. But it's going to go flying back down because somebody's going to cheat. Somebody's going to open the spigot.
Right.
So,
wow. Okay.
That's my take on it all.
Yeah. Very cool. Thank you. All right. All right, hang around, and we'll have time for one more segment when we come back, okay?
Sounds perfect.
All right, cool. Everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Paco Algren. You can check him out on the web at pacoalgren.com or disciplinenovel.com, or you can go to my site at mikehagan.com and link over to his site. And this program, by the way, will be up on the web and in the archives sometime tomorrow afternoon, probably maybe Wednesday morning at the latest if I get lazy. But we'll have it up there sometime in the next couple of days, and you can download it. There'll be an MP3 available for you and your friends. And if you didn't get to hear the program live, or you know somebody who might like to hear it, you can grab a copy of it and send it their way. Okay, you can also podcast the program and have it show up on your iPod anytime a new one is sort of birthed there on the web. All right? Okay, KOPN. 89.5 FM on the web, kopn.org. And one last website, since we're doing it, is my friends on Chondo. The music you've been hearing tonight on the web, ANCHONDO, on Chondo.com. And they also got the MySpace thing. All right? All right, this is on Chondo, and the song is called Picture. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back with Paco Algren in just a few minutes. And by the way, the phone number here, 573-443-8255 if you want to chat with us. Chondo, the song is called Picture, and you're listening to it on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. The radio program is called Radio Orbit. We do this every Monday night from 11 o'clock in the p.m. until 2 a.m. Tuesday morning. Talk with interesting folks, just like the one we've got with us tonight, Paco Algren. Hey, man, thanks for sticking around.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm having a discussion on your chat room about the subjective versus objective nature of thoughts.
Huh. God, I can't even grasp the question. Tell us what you mean by that.
I'm not even sure what I mean by that. I just need to go smoke pot and go to sleep.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Nikki says, I like to say on Chondo, and somebody else is talking about the objective nature of thoughts. Okay, here, I'll say this. I'll say what I said in the message board, that thoughts are the interpretative part of thoughts is subjective, meaning the interpretative part of thoughts. The part of thought, the aspect of thoughts, the quality of thoughts that allow us to interpret the universe, those are subjective. And they are, it's perception and nothing more. And it will always be subjective. The physical part of thoughts, the chemicals.
Right. The neurotransmitters and this and that.
Right. So that's subjective.
Okay.
That's part of reality. That is part of objective reality.
What about perfection? You've talked about this in your blog, and I thought that was actually a really thought-provoking line when I read it. The whole idea of, you know, what about it? Perfection, is it even real?
Perfection is unachievable. Unachievable. Perfection is something. In the blog, I talked about things in the universe that we tend to see as black and white, that we tend to see as absolutes, and there are no absolutes in the universe. Even concepts like supply and demand in economics, we've all been taught that when supply meets demand, that's where you achieve equilibrium. And every economist in the world will tell you equilibrium is unachievable.
Huh.
We tend toward equilibrium. We tend toward perfection. We tend toward what we perceive as perfection. But these are subjective interpretations of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
These are, again, interpretative. That's the key word, is that as entities in the universe, we are interpreting everything.
Mm-hmm.
We see the moon and we interpret what the moon is. Even the word moon is a subjective interpretation of this thing in space and time.
Right.
And somebody on the message board is getting upset with me because they're saying thoughts are things. Cindy is saying thoughts are things. in the universe. They exist. But the interpretative part of thoughts is subjective.
Mm.
And even though these thoughts exist, they do exist in reality. The interpretative part of it, the part that you're using to perceive the universe, that's subjective. And then that won't change.
All right. Yeah, fair enough. I think I agree with that, actually.
And that's why perfection is something that can't be achieved, because it's always interpretative. It's always, everybody has a different perception of perfection.
Yeah,
and as we try to achieve it, we're working off an aggregate collective of perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
You take 1,000 people and you say, what do you define, what would be the perfect car? And you're going to get 1,000 different answers.
Right.
So there is no such thing as perfection. We can tend toward it,
mm-hmm.
but we can never achieve it.
Do you think that the Earth or the human species or the universe for that matter or whatever is tending towards completion? Do you think there's a goal? Do you think it's just the random walk that the scientists tell us?
Random walk, that's a financial term.
Yeah, it actually is.
It's so funny. I mean, you just illustrated what I've been trying to say. The whole reason I wrote the book, because that random walk on Wall Street is a direct result of chaos theory, which is a direct result of quantum physics, which is so closely tied to Eastern philosophy. No, I don't think that there is an objective. I think the universe just is. And I think that we really pin ourselves down and we really hurt ourselves and we really cause a lot of psychological and emotional damage by spending so much time trying to figure out what the point of it all is.
Hmm.
I don't know what the point is. When people ask me what's the point, I just say it's the growth of knowledge.
Yeah, this is the point. Live in life. Do it.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a gentleman actually in the studio with me who'd like to ask you a question.
Okay.
And I will say hello to Bartholomew, and Bart, say hi to Paco.
Hey, Paco.
Hey, Bart, how are you?
Hey, great. I'm really enjoying the show.
Thank you. I'm kind of tired, so I'm not sure if I'm enjoying it or not. No, I'm kidding. I think this is really a lot of fun. I wish all of my interviews were this laid back and thought provoking at the same time.
You have a question?
Bart? Yeah, I was thinking, looking at photographs from Hubble concerning the in-depth study of the universe and the firmament, it looks like a lot of stuff's going on out there. But I just wonder if it would be safe to say that it's probably in balance.
I would, again, it would be extremely arrogant. I mean, I know everybody who's listening to this show probably already thinks I'm the most arrogant human being on earth, but I guess I couldn't get much more arrogant.
I didn't want to imply that. You should listen to some of my other interviews, man.
I think it would be extremely arrogant for any of us to say. And this is one of the most obnoxious things about the human race to me, is that we actually think we know. We have the temerity to say that we know what the universe is all about.
It's absolutely silly. We ascribe it to a
guy up in the clouds throwing lightning bolts, or we say that it's this or that, or here's my favorite phrase in the whole world. Well, what I believe is this. I mean, anytime somebody says something like that, I just run like hell. I can't even handle that. I mean, I don't care what you believe, because I guarantee you, you're wrong one way or another. You're wrong. My own belief, just based on all of the theories that are coming to light now, the theories about quantum physics, the theories about, and the way that they tie into Eastern philosophies, and the way that, following markets for so long, you cannot spend 2 decades in the financial markets without seeing these patterns and yet seeing the chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Mandelbrot and fractal geometry, you look at these things and they are mind-numbing in their complexity, and yet they're mind-numbing in their simplicity.
That's amazing.
What you just asked me is probably a rhetorical question. The universe is in balance. If you study Taoism, or if you study Buddhism, or if you study any Eastern philosophies, there's this underlying theme that seems to recur, and that is that there is balance in everything, and that no matter how much complexity there is, and how much you see going on, if you see a hurricane, or if you're in the middle of a hurricane, there's still balance there, and it's the way that you know, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Everything about it, it all equals out. There's always the same amount on one side of the equation as there is on the other side of the equation.
Hmm. It's just the detail in between.
Yeah.
Huh. Very interesting.
Like sitting on the pivot point of the seesaw.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. There's so much flux on either end of that seesaw, but it in the middle there's nothing.
Hmm. All right. Thanks, Mark. Let's see another one here. Okay, this is a good one, actually, Paco. Check this out.
Is it going to be too hard for me?
I don't think so, but it's kind of cool, actually. The person mentions that we were talking about chess earlier, and you mentioned that one of the strategies in chess is to get something going on the board over here to distract the player from what's really going on over here on the other side of the board.
Right.
The listener asks, tell us, Paco, what do you think they, with they in quotes, are trying to distract us from? In other words, this comes up in the context of our economic conversation. Do you think something like that is going on, that we're actually being led to look at things that, like stock markets or housing crises or credit crunches, to distract us from other things?
Yeah, I do. The housing market, I don't believe that has a lot to do with terrorism, but... And again, it's not just terrorists. It's not a bunch of guys, and I'm not trying to be derogatory or racist by saying this, but it's not a bunch of people on camels running around through the desert with guns. These people and these terrorist organizations, and first of all, let me say this, that the most powerful mathematics in the world were invented in the Middle East. I mean, Middle East is the cradle of civilization.
Sure.
And I don't think that there are any dummies over there, and I have nothing but respect for the culture, and I have nothing but respect for Islam in a lot of ways. And these people know what they're doing. And if they hate the United States, I hate to say that, but I understand why they hate the United States. And it's not the United States they hate. They don't hate you. They don't hate me.
Right,
they
hate the policies of the federal government, frankly, yeah.
Right. And I can't blame them. If I'd watched some of the things happen to my culture, my family, mm-hmm. my friends, that I'm sure that they've seen at our hands, and I would be upset too.
Yeah.
But let's assume that it's a big chess game. And let's assume that there are no dummies over there. They have very talented, very educated people working for them. Mm-hmm. How would they think? Well, remember that they're very well funded. And the reason they're very, very well funded is
by us.
Oil. Yeah. And if anybody believes that the Saudis don't hate us, then I've got a bridge I want
to
sell.
That's amazing to me, you know, the whole 9/11 business and all that. I'm peripherally interested in it. I have my own ideas, but I always think it's interesting that, you know, that nobody ever talks about the Saudis. But if the, you know, if the 19 terrorist story is, you know, even close to a legitimate one, I mean, my God, the first place to go is Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, the Saudis hate us. We all know people who've lived there on the compounds, for whatever reason, working for Aramco or working for some of the other companies there, where Americans are allowed in. Americans are barely allowed into Saudi Arabia. They're almost not allowed off the compounds. There are certain leniencies that are given to them, but Saudis hate Americans. They just don't like us at all, and we have this kind of tenuous relationship based on our common interests. But again, I'm going to go back to what I said before. If you take a list of the top oil exporters and producers in the world and refiners in the world, it's a who's who of countries that hate the United States. Now, if you have enemies and they're selling you something as precious as oil, and they have an opportunity to destroy your currency, which is the lifeblood of your economy, do you think they're not going to do it?
Yeah.
Now, flying planes in the buildings, it's very impactful. It's very psychologically damaging. And there's nobody who saw that tragedy who wasn't impacted by it. I know where I was. I know what I was thinking the moment that it happened. And what I was thinking was, they've hit the Pentagon. They've hit the World Trade Center. The NYSE is next.
Yeah, what's next? Yeah.
I was definitely afraid they were going to hit the NYSE, because that would have been... that would have been catastrophic. I mean, I can't even imagine the damage that would have done, and yet they didn't. And I was surprised. But that leads me even more to believe that it was a carefully orchestrated chess move to kind of keep us from seeing the bigger picture, which is there's something else going on. Why is the dollar sliding against the euro? I can tell you this, that a lot of Middle Eastern countries right now are starting to denominate the transactions in oil in euros.
Right, and no longer using the petrodollar.
Why is that? Why are the Chinese, instead of using dollars or even using euros, why are they starting to denominate in yuan, their own currency? There's so much going on right now that we need to pay attention to, and we're just not. And so that very well could be the chess move that we're paying so much attention to that is distracting us from the real thing, the slide in the dollar. Why is the dollar sliding? Why is the dollar sliding? Why are we not supporting it? What's going on here? I want to know. Something's just not right.
That's one of your major concerns, the dollar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And going back to what I said earlier, if the dollar fails, what are you going to buy milk with?
Yeah,
are you going to buy milk with?
You know, it's funny, Paco, strange when I say it, but I'm looking at the back of your book, you know, and only a short time ago, the price of the book would have the number in U.S. dollars, and then it'd have a slash, and it'd have Canadian price right next to it, right? Well, yours doesn't have that anymore. It just has the U.S. price. But if it had the Canadian price, it'd be more expensive than the U.S. price, which to me, I've never seen that happen in my life. I mean, it was usually, you know, a flip-flop, and it's not much of a difference right now, but the fact that the Canadian dollar is actually worth more than the U.S. dollar to me is remarkable.
Yeah, I just, it'll be interesting to see where things go. Now, last week we saw oil fall a lot, we saw gold fall, and we saw the dollar pick up.
What do you make of the elections and all that? I mean, we're at the end of the program. Might as well just get your opinion. I mean, this whole business of the currency not being backed by anything that's worth any real value. I mean, do you think that the ideas of somebody like Ron Paul with, you know, a return to a currency that's backed by gold or silver and sort of the, you know, kick out the Federal Reserve type of an idea, you think that holds any water?
If we're gonna survive, it's gonna be because of ideas like the ones that Ron Paul is espousing. Now, Ron Paul is gonna be the first guy to say that that's only the first step. I mean, Ron Paul and I are pretty like-minded in that regard. Well, in most regards. I mean, I think.
Yeah, I like him. I'm praying. I mean, he's the one guy that I see that at least I think is telling the truth. And at this point, I'm just looking for people that are gonna talk straight. You know.
Yeah, I never thought Ron Paul was a guy. I've been following Ron Paul since the '80s when he ran for
president. Yeah, he's been a congressman for a long time too. Yeah. And, but he's consistent, I'll tell you that much. I know his record.
Yeah, he's a libertarian. I mean, he calls himself a Republican, but he's a libertarian.
Right, right.
He's brilliant, but I never thought he would get this much popularity, and I'm thrilled that he is. Mm-hmm. You know, at least he's shifting the debate and more toward a free market economy and free market ideals. That's really the source of prosperity and efficiency, is free markets.
But free, not said to be free.
Right, exactly. The problem with the United States is facing some really tough decisions here. The corporate tax rate in the United States is higher than anywhere else in the world. That's the first time that's ever been true. I mean, Eastern Bloc countries have flat taxes now.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. Europe, every country in Europe, I mean, I'm talking about traditionally socialist countries like France and Spain, have lower corporate tax rates than the United States.
That's remarkable.
That's frightening. We need to lower the corporate tax rate across the board. I know I sound like a Republican here, and everybody's freaking out. I'm not a Republican. I couldn't be less of a Republican. I'm a free market advocate, and we're not going to be competitive. I mean, you've got China growing at 12 or 13% a year. You've got the price of oil going through the roof, and Hillary Clinton is actually talking about not only keeping the corporate tax rate high, but maybe even raising it.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't even fathom that. I mean, it's like, okay, let's just be as stupid as we can possibly be.
All right, your next book. We'll talk a little bit about, I know you've got a lot going on, but there's certainly a sequel that's at least somewhere back there in the corners of your mind. Maybe you can just tell people they got something to look forward to.
Yeah, I actually have been writing it. I have about 100 pages of the first draft.
Wow.
I have the whole story written in my mind. I just need to get it out.
And it's directly related to the first book?
Very closely related. And there are some things about it that I know that nobody else knows.
Well, you're writing it, for God's sake.
I've known since the beginning. There are some things in Discipline. If you read Discipline again,
mm-hmm.
there are things in there. There are clues in there that'll tell you things about the next book.
Uh-huh.
Even in the first chapter,
huh,
there are
cool.
clues that'll tell you about the next book that nobody has any idea about.
Huh. All right. Well, that's awesome. And plans for a movie, perhaps? I guess you're talking with people.
Yeah. There's
make a great movie. Actually, I think.
I think it would be cool. I'm just a little worried about. The whole blockbuster thing, you know?
Ah, yeah, but, you know, well, how's the book being received in a general sense? I mean, are you selling books, and are people digging it?
Well, we're selling more books than we ever thought possible. We're about to run out of the first print run, actually. And, I mean, if you just look at the reviews on Amazon, you'll see that people are just going nuts about it. I'm flattered, and I'm surprised. When I took this on, I thought, you know, if I don't get it out into the world, then I'll always wonder. But...
Mm.
When I finally made the decision to publish it, my attitude was, you know what, this is a really radical book. It's got some radical ideas in it. It's okay if the rest of the world hates it. Just get it out there and just grow a thick skin. And I've been really surprised at how well it's been received. I've been flattered, and I don't know really how to react to it because I'm so grateful to people for being so supportive. I mean... you just wouldn't believe the number of friends that I made.
That's awesome. Well, and you got a good group working there at the publishing company, too, because they were really helpful just in my correspondences with them before, you know, you and I got together. So good for them, you know.
Yeah, it's always good to hear that.
All right. Well, look, my friend, it's been a pleasure, and we're going to have to say good night, and I'm going to hand the microphone over to my friend Ruth, who's going to come and play some music for the people for the next few hours. But congratulations and good luck with the next book and with your new family and your daughter. I'm so pleased. It's great. Good luck.
Thanks very much, Mike. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this conversation. It's really, really been great.
I've had a great time, too. You take care of yourself, all right?
All right. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care. All right, everybody. Paco Algren on the web at disciplinenovel.com or pacoalgren.com. Or you can link over there from mysite.com, or you can link over there from myspace.com, lots of .coms. And you can check it out on the web in the next couple of days because this archived program will be there in the Radio Orbit archives in the next couple of days. And you can download it and share it with your friends, okay? All right, we will close things out here with another song from my friends on Chando. This one is called Broken Heart. And I want to say thanks to the guys for making this great music for us and sharing it with us tonight. And we'll come back next week, as we always do, with Richard Allen Miller. It's going to be a great program with the man himself, Dr. Richard Allen Miller. Brilliant physicist and sort of a modern-day alchemist, as a matter of fact. So we'll do that next week. And in the meantime, enjoy yourselves, take care, and keep listening to KOPN, and keep supporting free speech and all that other good stuff, all right? This one is Broken Heart on Chando. You've been listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Stick around for Ruth and Crash Landing.